Hey, Veeam Community Podcast listeners, did you hear the news? Veeam is hosting a new event allowing you to discover a new level of availability for your modern data center. The inaugural VeeamON event will be held in October of this year at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas. Everything from executive keynotes, product deep dives, labs, certification resources, as well as a customer and partner showcase will be at the event. Pre-register today to qualify for introductory pricing. For more information and to register, go to go.veeam.com/VeeamON.
Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 99, Deduplication Anyway. Here we go. Today my guest is Howard Marks. How you doing, Howard?
I'm doing very well, Rick.
Thanks for being on, Howard, especially a short notice. I kind of had to shuffle some priorities around. Really appreciate that. Howard, you and I go way back in the scheme of things. But I know your story, but the listeners may not. So take a moment, Howard, introduce yourself. Tell us about some of the publications and things you do.
Sure. I spent about 30 years as an independent consultant helping mid-sized companies fix their IT nightmares. And during that time, I wrote for various publications, starting at PC Magazine back in 1987, and for the past 15 years or so at Network Computing, both as a magazine and now, unfortunately, just as a website. And I now run Deep Storage LLC, which is an independent test lab and analyst firm. So vendors give us their gear, and we beat it into submission for a living.
That I can confirm. He's asked me some very tough questions, like, how do I make it really choke, you know, when he's working with his stuff. This guy is good people. And you can find Howard on Twitter at DeepStorageNet, and I'm going to put links to his publications and his Twitter stuff in the blog post that goes up with the podcast. So, Howard, deduplication, I don't know, man. It's first of all, it exists a lot of different ways, but before we get into the different ways, what's your high-level take on dedupe?
Well, so there are two forms of data reduction, compression and deduplication.
Uh-huh.
And the difference is the scale at which they work. Compression's micro. It finds little things like the letter A repeated six times and eliminates it and puts a symbol in there that says, put six A's here. Deduplication works on bigger chunks, and it goes, there's the corporate logo. Mm-hmm. I've seen that before. Why am I going to store this again? So either way, it's about squeezing more than 10 pounds of storage into a 10-pound disk array.
And, you know, the other half of that is a lot of people associate compression and deduplication together, but they actually, because of that difference, they need to be sequenced accordingly. And the way I like to explain it is that deduplicated data may still be compressible, but compressed data might not be able to be deduplicated. Is that fair to say?
I wouldn't say might not. I would say won't.
Yeah, okay.
Once you compress your data, so if you're looking at deduplication, the key in data deduplication is for whatever algorithm you're using to find the natural breaks in the data that define repeating large chunks, like that logo we talked about.
Sure.
And when you compress the data, it makes all the edges fuzzy. And the compression algorithm can't see where that thing started and where it ended because it compressed a little bit differently this time based on what it was adjacent to.
Now, the way in which that is implemented, wow, then it gets a little bit more complicated. You can have hardware do it. You can have application software do it. You can have volumes of a storage system, which even today you could kind of lean on the operating system to do it. You can have software implementations of hardware on software, optionally running on hardware, do it. All kinds of ways to do it. I like to say, Howard, before we kind of get into some of those different modes, I like to say that there's no single best way to do it. Do you think that's a fair way of saying dedupe, you know, addressing it with all the different modes?
Yeah, you can make some generalizations about certain techniques being better for certain workloads, like the variable block size thing that Quantum and Data Domain do is really good for backup data, but would be really bad for primary storage.
Oh, absolutely. So let's talk about that example for a bit. So like the Data Domain, I have one here in the lab. I use it a lot. It's funny. No matter what I throw at that, always 2.3 terabytes free. Love it. Okay. No, I'm serious. No matter what I throw, it's awesome. But what I like about that, and of course what I do in my professional practice, I pretty much put one backup profile in there. But if you think about the person or company that can afford a data domain, the chances are they've got a lot of backup type stuff going there. You might have application level backups, one or more backup softwares with image-based backups going in there. And what happens then is you actually are using that variable block across all the different ingests. And it might not find many hits across, but it sure does a good job, because it also, this is important to note, will do it in line. So it does it as this data profile comes in, and that's where it kind of gets magical, honestly, because, you know, it comes in pretty quick, and a lot of CPU stuff happens, and it'll rebalance stuff around. But, you know, you've worked with a lot of this stuff. What's kind of the process of dedupe on ingest? What kind of happens on storage systems then?
Okay, so for the vast majority of the deduplication systems, the basic technique is called chunking and hashing. So the first thing is that system looks at the incoming data stream and it decides what constitutes a chunk. Simple systems use a fixed chunk size. They say, oh, I use 8K chunks or 64K chunks or 512 megabyte chunks. And the data domain kind of looks at the data and uses a mathematical algorithm for figuring out, based on the data, where the line between the chunks goes, and the chunks can be a variable size.
Mm-hmm.
It's more compute intensive, but it means that if you had a letter and you spell checked and it made that word one character shorter, that by the time it got to the middle of the letter, it would go, oh, I've seen this letter before. Where if you were using fixed chunk sizes, everything shifted over one character, and so now the data doesn't dedupe at all.
When I think about those types of systems, right, I mean, specifically like a data domain that's targeted for backup storage, right, and you made that distinction earlier that it's not really, you know, designed to be primary storage. But, you know, what happens there is that, honestly, it functions pretty good. You don't really feel it when you're loading it up with things like backups. And if you have a large data profile on there already, meaning other backups, including, you know, application-level backups, maybe other image backups or whatever, maybe just ISOs, you know, those don't really dedupe and compress well, but you could store them there. So it's a pretty versatile file store. I imagine it would also be kind of memory usage that goes along with that compute. Is that right?
Right. So once you break the data up into chunks, you then generate a hash for each chunk. And you, if that hash matches the hash that you've seen from a chunk before, it means you don't have to, you've seen that data before and you don't have to store it.
Right.
But that means that in memory, the data domain has to keep a table of all of the hash values of all of the chunks it's seen before.
And hashing's a lot of work, a lot of CPU work. Like one of the products I use, now this isn't specifically for dedupe, but I use Hashtab. Windows systems, right click, calculate a hash. If you have a large file, that takes a while. So the art of chunklets, or, you know, chunking it out, let's just say whatever the number is, and it might be variable, so it has to interpret, and finding that hash, that's a lot of kind of back and forth that it has to do effectively real time. So
right, which is why vendors like Quantum and Data Domain have so many different models, because they match the amount of CPU they need to manage the amount of storage that device has. And they can therefore use cheaper processors on the smaller systems.
Yep. Now, when you talk about these types of storage systems, namely dedupe appliances, DXI, data domain, store once I'll throw in there also, Exagrid to an extent, that one's a little bit different. Well, they're all a little bit different. But they only offer, now here's the big catch here, all of these, I believe, only talk NAS protocols. So that would be NFS and SIFS or SMB.
Or virtual tape library.
Or VTL. That's kind of different, but that actually is a great dedupe profile in itself.
The virtual tape library is a less chatty protocol.
VTL would be another way of doing it, and that can go directly over fiber, and depending on the product, or iSCSI. So they can communicate over those protocols as well. You know, VTL, that's kind of a different thing. We'll park that. Actually, stay tuned, listeners. Episode 101, I have Ralph Wynn from Falcon Store coming on to talk about VTL. But when the dedupe appliances are great, but let's just say, Howard, I don't have the money for that. What do you think about volume-level dedupe? You know, I could throw NetApp out there in the form of a device. I could also throw Windows.
Or Windows Server. Or ZFS.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or a lot, frankly, and a lot of the modern hybrid and all-solid-state arrays as primary storage do that, although using an all-solid-state array for backup would mean that you have more money than the deity, and we wouldn't want to go there.
That's true. So, and those are all, then it gets to be a little bit all over the place, right?
So, in general, that deduplication for primary storage uses a fixed block size because it makes random I/O much easier. And in terms of how much your data is going to dedupe, for some data sets, fixed block will be 80% as good as variable block.
Mm-hmm.
For other data sets, it'll be like 2 to 1, that you'll need twice as much storage with fixed block as with variable. Exchange is really bad at that. If you're doing Exchange backups, because Exchange defragments its internal database every night, data moves around, and it really is bad for fixed block data stores.
Well, that's a good point. So over time, the blocks are all shifting because it's going to optimize that data profile. And I'd even go so far as to say that most people Exchange as their largest single application data profile, other than a file server possibly. But if that is changing all kinds of things at the block level, as it possibly should from an application performance level, I'd rather it be more efficient than needlessly big. Agree?
Right.
And what happens there is that shifts the blocks a lot, and if you're landing then on dedupe, it's going to have some work to kind of clean up.
Right, because Exchange's database page size never aligns right with the larger deduplication blocks.
Sure. Yeah, I categorically, I'd say that Exchange is a very structured data type. So that's also one of the caveats why if you're using Windows Server 2012 deduplication, they explicitly say, do not run Windows Server 2012 dedupe on a volume that includes an Exchange database. And it may run. In fact, it automatically is excluding that file type. You could probably take that off, but it may run. You're just wasting CPU and I/O bandwidth, really.
How deep do you want to go on this?
This is a family show. I want to keep it safe. I don't want anyone hurt in the listening of the podcast, you know.
So when Microsoft went from Exchange 2007 to 2010 and then 2013, they made several changes to the database engine to make it use fewer IOPS so you could run it on slower disks, including things like getting rid of single instance storage. So what they did is they traded turning more of their I.O. into sequential I.O. for being less efficient at how much disk space they took up. When you deduplicate the data, you reverse that trade. And you turn all of that sequential I.O. back into random I.O.
And that's and just going to be
and it hammers the system.
Yeah, right. Wow. So, know thy app.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And that's what happens, right? And that's why restoring from a backup appliance is slower than backing up.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're doing a logical sequential read. But physically on the disk drives, they're doing random reads because they got to grab all the chunks and reassemble them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why for primary storage, dedupe doesn't have that same performance degradation. Because on primary storage, we're primarily reading from flash. Mm-hmm. And flash does random just as fast as it does sequential.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what, Howard? I came into this thinking I knew it all, but now I'm going to walk out with more questions, I think.
Isn't that the definition of a good conversation?
Absolutely, and that's why, you know, I leaned on you for this. But, so let me, here's one of the things I tell people, right? Because I work in a, as people know, I work for Veeam, but,
we don't hold that against you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. But basically, you know, there's a dedupe I'm familiar with, and that's what I call software-based source dedupe, which is done by something that doesn't own the disks. And every time I kind of complete the story about dedupe with people, I'm always balancing three things between price, performance, and overall dedupe, and I kind of end it in a jokingly fashion and say, you got to choose one or two. And I'd go so far as to say that dedupe, now with your exception of your primary, I like that example with the flash assist, but there's always a checkout penalty, right, or overhead, a performance overhead. Could also be an ingest, but definitely you feel it on outbound I.O. But
yeah, we call it the rehydration tax.
And your mileage may vary depending on a million factors, like
there is a vendor who shall remain nameless because they fixed this, and I don't want people to punish them for a problem they fixed a long time ago. But there was a vendor where the fastest restore they could do was 20% as fast as the fastest backup they would do.
Ouch. That's a very high tax.
Yeah.
Wow. And now, you know, I have trouble putting a number on it, but I see it on a lot of different things. I see it on Windows. I see it on volume dedupe. I see it in software-based source dedupe built in. So it exists, and it just depends on a lot of things.
Right. And in no small part, it's that we've randomized the data. And so when we're doing a restore, which is a sequential read, it's having to do lookups and head seeks to do that.
Now, Howard, if you had to have a preference, and I'm going to intentionally exclude the appliances, okay? So like the Exagrid data domain, DXi store ones, we just categorically are going to exclude those. So
software only.
Software only, or volume, ZFS, Windows where you can build your own. Do you feel like you have more, if you were going to build a system, if you're going to go down the route where you have a data profile that you have a good sense of, right, you know the app a little bit, you know what dedupe technology you're going to use, et cetera, would you invest in better disks, right? So don't just buy 4 terabyte SATA drives. Maybe I'll buy that are 7,200 RPM. Maybe I'll buy 500 gig that are 15.5K, and I'll get smaller but faster drives, and then maybe I'll get better dedupe, so I'm kind of blending best of both worlds. Would you go that route or just go cheap and deep?
I would go cheap and deep. And I have done this a couple of times. And the truth is that restore performance is important.
Mm-hmm.
but the difference between a 4-hour restore and a 5-hour restore isn't.
Fair point.
That once we're taking an application offline for hours, because we have to do a full restore, a 10 or 15% performance difference isn't going to matter.
Well, that's a good point, especially, and a lot of products can do instant restore techniques that will
A lot of products can do instant restore techniques, and using the 4 terabyte SATA drives is going to make those applications perform like a pig.
But they're performing.
But no, but the solution to that is I'm going to put an SSD in one server. And when I'm running instant restore, I'm going to use that SSD as a cache.
Yeah, especially for writes.
Even if I'm not, you know, so I would rather spend some money and, you know, get something like Pernix data or Proximal data. But even if you just use the built-in VMware read cache.
The flash, the vSphere flash read cache.
Right. Yeah. If I dedicate that whole SSD to flash read cache for the app that's being run in instant recovery, I'm going to offload so much I/O from that backing store that even the writes are going to be a lot faster.
You know, the vSphere flash read cache, I think, and I've been writing some blogs about it, you know, I think it's a fair point today that a lot of people are confused on how to go about using SSDs in their data center. All flash array, hybrid, yeah, I don't know, right? There's a lot of different ways to do it.
I do seminars on that because there's so many ways to
do
it.
But if, you know, honestly, the flash recache is, I think, a good way for a lot of people to start. Would you agree with that?
My problem is it is so inflexible.
Oh, I'll give you that.
That, you know, it is, I think that it is good for, you know, the use case I just talked about where I'm going to do this once in a while and I'm just getting ready for it. I think it is good for people to dip their toe in the water and see if caching is a good idea for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not want to admit that the operational costs of having to assign blocks of SSD to individual VMs.
Or individual VMDKs, even more specifically.
And the inefficiency that creates and how it uses the flash make it hard for me to say you should use that as a solution compared to something like Proximal that's, you know, a couple of $1,000s more.
Well, a fair point. Yeah, vSphere flash recache, for one, is built into the hypervisor, but honestly, it doesn't have the legs for an enterprise deployment for manageability and scale.
So, that's
a fair assessment. But honestly, then they want to talk vSAN, which is a whole nother. We're not going to go there today.
We're not going to go there today.
Not going to go there today. So, you know, additionally with dedupe, right? So then I talked briefly a bit about, you know, software dedupe that, you know, for something that doesn't own the disks, that's the important thing, right? So if a software is applying a deduplication, and it might land on an appliance or land on a non-deduplicated storage system, software-based dedupe, yeah, I mean, it's sometimes it's good enough for most people, but, you know, it doesn't own the disks, takes a lot of CPU and memory, maybe multipathing to read and then to write somewhere. But that has a good fit, too, would you say?
There's a place for it.
Yeah. It has compression, you know, usually works in conjunction with it as well.
Right, and you know, it all depends on what kind of data you're storing.
That's true.
You know, if the majority of your data is things like rich media that aren't going to compress and dedupe, then why not go and store, you know, use the backup software's dedupe for the code and the machine images, you know, for that other side, even if it's less effective, you can buy more disk.
You know, you bring up a good point. There was an appliance back in the day. Sure, you know Ocarina. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
They had a really cool appliance that had a lot of very specific compressors that were optimized for certain media types. Like, they had a very specific MP4 compressor, right? And it actually would handle those data types well. That kind of got acquired by Dell, and now it's a Dior 4000 backup target appliance. So that's another one of those appliances I'll throw out there. But some of them do handle those types of protocols or file profiles pretty well.
To some extent.
True. Yeah,
the problem is that, you know, most of those files are already compressed.
Yeah, that's the whole notion of a compressor for or codec, I should say. A codec to encode it efficiently. It's kind of like the whole camera, right? If you've ever taken a photo with your camera, not like a phone camera, or maybe a phone camera, but basically you get like this 5 meg file. And of course it's big. The camera just wants to be fast. It doesn't need to be efficient. Then you put it on your computer, use a real processor, and you open the same photo up, save it as the same photo format, and then it goes down to like 300K. I do that, and it's like magic with my wife at home with the baby photos. She doesn't understand how I'm doing it, but I'm like, look, just trust me. I've got a real processor over here. I can do this stuff a lot more efficiently.
I can make these things shrink.
Exactly. So, Howard, what else about deduplication, you know, would you kind of offer?
I think the last thing I want to talk about is, so we broke the data up into chunks, and we use the hash to say this is the same data. And somebody always says, but what happens if two blocks of data generate the same hash but aren't the same?
Oh, it's a theoretically possible, more than theoretical, actually.
Well, it is more than theoretical, so there's two ways to do deduplication. Folks like NetApp use a weak hash, which makes the odds of a collision more frequent, but is computationally simpler. And then when the system says these two blocks have the same hash, they actually compare the data. And so that method eliminates any worry about hash collisions because it is designed to accommodate hash collisions.
Interesting. So
the other way to do it is to use a strong hash like SHA-1, which is 160 bits.
But that's going to take more time.
It is more computationally complex, so it takes more CPU to generate. But with SHA-1, the odds of a collision are substantially lower than the risks we take other places in our systems.
Oh, the risks. Yes.
So I have a blog post that's going to go up on network computing probably next week about how we live in a quantum world. There's no absolutes. When you store data on a disk drive, there's a 1 in 10 to the 14th chance that when you try and read it, it's going to fail.
Really?
And so I calculated what the odds were for 4 petabytes of data deduped in 8K chunks of a hash collision. And it's 1 in 10 to the 46th.
So pretty rare.
Well, it's not only pretty rare, it is 10 to the 20th times more rare than a disk read error. It is 10 to the 15th times more rare than both disks in a RAID 1 set failing. And it is 10 to the 20th times more rare than you or I being killed by a meteor during this webinar.
The fact that you have it quantified to that level, Howard, just confirms why I went to you to be on this show. Guys, this guy is good people. I absolutely recommend you follow him on Twitter. He'll engage with you. He's not one of those Twitter folk that'll just one-way traffic you. This guy is good stuff.
I may, however, be snarky.
Hey, snark goes with the road. I'll take that. At least we didn't break out the Brooklyn alphabet. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
So on that note, Howard, you recently, I guess it's been a year and a half now, right? You've moved from the East Coast to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Is that correct?
I have.
So you're liking it down there?
I love it.
That's
awesome. The sun shines 340 days a year.
340?
Yep.
Is that because you're gone 26 or the whatever, 25 days a year?
Well, most of the month of July, it rains for about a half an hour every day. And then the sun comes back out. But since it rained, it doesn't count as a day of sunshine.
Interesting quantification. You know, I have a funny New Mexico story. So I took a vacation there with my wife, and I saw a guy on the streets of Chimayo, Mexico, selling peppers in a bag. And I felt bad for the guy. I bought these peppers, and it changed my life. I've become a spice guru. I've grinded my own peppers. I still call this guy, and he ships me peppers, New Mexico dried hatch chilies, preferably harvested in the fall. Okay.
I love how in the fall there's guys roasting peppers in the parking lot of every store.
I know it. I know it. And it's life-changing. Life-changing, absolutely. So, just if you go to a restaurant in that area, if you ask for chili cheese fries, they're not going to be what you think. They're chile cheese fries. That's
right. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, hey, Howard. Once again, everyone, Howard is on Twitter, at DeepStorageNet. He writes at
Network Computing.
Network Computing, yep.
And at www.deepstorage.net.
DeepStorage.net. I will put notes in the podcast, and you can follow the graybeards there. Awesome. Thanks for being on the podcast, Howard.
You're welcome, Rick. It's been fun.